Good morning, I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up, it's the National Day of Prayer. When was the last time you read your Bible outside of church? How to navigate uncertain and tumultuous times by making God part of your family. It is today's Throwback Thursday. Also this morning, cancer rates in young women are rising at an alarming rate. Those under 50 have an 82% higher incidence rate than men in that same age group. To kick off Women's Health Month, a reminder about the importance of early diagnosis for the best outcomes. And happening around town, members of the cast at the Fort Findlay Playhouse join us to preview their latest production, a little show you may be familiar with called 9 to 5. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Thursday, May 1st, 2025. Among the news headlines, things will be making headlines today. The state of Ohio public school teachers are planning a massive rally outside the Ohio State House today. Thousands of union educators and supporters are expected in Columbus to speak out against the state's budget proposal and cuts to school funding. Now, we've talked about this over the past couple of weeks, the latest proposals of the Ohio budget, or the House proposal passed a couple of weeks ago. Still a lot of steps to this process to be played out, but the House proposal actually increases school funding overall, but decreases the anticipated school funding for this year based on the formula that they set up a couple of years ago that would fully fund schools according to the Ohio Constitution and all of that. So, yeah, they're actually getting more money, but not as much more as what they were promised. Franklin County Municipal Court will be shutting down at 2 o'clock this afternoon to help avoid traffic issues. So if you happen to be in Columbus today, be aware of that. So that's making headlines. Also saw this on the Newswire that I thought was interesting. We've been talking in the news. You've heard stories about the number of measles cases in the U.S. so far this year. Outbreak of measles. Well, now whooping cough cases are on the rise. So far in 2025, 8,485 cases have been reported. This is compared to 4,266 cases for the same period of time last year. So that is basically a 100% jump. It's doubled the number of whooping cough cases. Whooping cough, of course, is the common name for pertussis and is particularly dangerous for young children and babies. And yes, it can be prevented through vaccination. 80% of those exposed who have not been vaccinated will develop the pertussis infection. 80%. World Health Organization estimates that 160,000 children under the age of 5 will die from pertussis each year. So this is another one of those things you don't want to mess around with. Seeing the a dramatic rise in the number of pertussis or whooping cough cases. Perhaps on a related note, I saw a report that was out from the CDC yesterday, which says that the maternal mortality rate in the U.S. is rising overall. According to the CDC's findings, the maternal mortality rate rose to 19 deaths per 100,000 live births, which is up from 18.6 just 2 years ago. And a number of causes for this: 19 deaths per 100,000 live births doesn't sound like a lot, but the U.S. has one of the highest maternal mortality rates among developed nations, wealthy nations. So past research has found wide racial disparities as well. Black women, the maternal mortality rate is far higher than for white women. But this is Women's Health Month in May, so is the reason to highlight this at this point in time. But it's we have a ways to go in terms of health in this country overall. Just another couple of examples there. Couple of items here among the first things you need to know this morning. Already the 1st of May, already into the fifth month of the year, is just flying by. And you may not be thinking about Christmas just yet, but this is worth noting. You can start making your plans. Amy Grant, Michael W. Smith, and CeCe Winans have announced a Christmas Together concert tour beginning November 28th, Greensboro, North Carolina. This is a short tour, just 9 stops, but 2 of them are pretty close by, Detroit and Cincinnati. And I'm not sure of the exact dates for the Detroit and Cincinnati shows, but I do know that the tour begins November 28th and ends December 8th. So it's somewhere in that window. But if you are a big fan, and who isn't? I mean, Amy Grant, Michael W. Smith, and CeCe Winans, that'd be a great triple bill there. I don't know. I'm assuming that tickets are on sale now. Because the story is in the headlines, they announced the tour. Maybe the tickets go on sale Friday. But anyway, you can Google it if you are interested and find out there are a couple of nearby shows if you are so inclined. This is every day we got to have a doom and gloom story, right? Society is doomed. We're all going to die. Something we're concerned about, fearful of, worried over. Well, this is, I guess, today's doom and gloom story here. It is a new study from Cornell University, which suggests that artificial intelligence is making everyone sound more American, more homogenized. We're all sounding the same. Researchers found that AI users in India using predictive text are pushed towards more Western writing patterns, writing styles, like what we would use in the U.S. Because people write differently in different countries and different languages and so on. When Indian writers would describe, say, native Indian dishes without the use of AI, they included regional details and specifics. However, when using AI, those cultural specifics disappeared and were instead replaced by generic descriptors of the dish, like rich and flavorful and so on. So it's just more Americanized or more homogenized. According to the lead researchers of the study from Cornell University, the use of AI in writing could lead to cultural stereotyping and language homogenization. People start writing similarly to others, and that is not what we want. We don't want everyone to write or talk the same. So we're kind of losing our uniqueness, artificial intelligence. Okay, it's not a we're all going to die kind of doom and gloom story, but we do kind of lose something by the use of AI. Maybe in future generations of artificial intelligence, they'll be able to fix this or account for it. But it is kind of an interesting side effect of the AI trend. Maybe an unexpected side effect. Always, you know, always have these unanticipated, unintentional consequences. This may be one of those. Kind of interesting. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day, this may make you feel a little bit better. If you are having one of those days, or it's very early, maybe it's too early yet to be having one of those days. Maybe you already are. But if, you know, something goes wrong today, and you're feeling kind of bad, like it's just one of those days, this may make you feel a little bit better. This is how you know you're having a bad day. Imagine loading up your tablet with hours of entertainment for an international flight, only for the tablet to get stuck outside of your reach. Now, That would be bad enough. But imagine if your stuck tablet made the flight divert to a different airport hours away from your destination. This is the situation that one individual flying from Los Angeles to Munich found himself in. The tablet became jammed in a business class seat, forcing the plane to make an unscheduled landing in Boston. According to a statement from Lufthansa, the airline, the tablet showed visible signs of deformation due to the movements of the seat while it was wedged in and stuck in the frame of the seat. And as for why this would necessitate a flight diversion, it wasn't because they were just trying to be helpful in getting this passenger their tablet back. The lithium-ion batteries in the tablet could overheat, explode, or catch fire if they were damaged. And it certainly appeared as though the tablet was being damaged, being stuck in the seat. So out of an abundance of caution, they diverted to Boston so that they could pull the tablet out from where it was wedged. The company said at Lufthansa, "The safety of our passengers and crew is always our top priority. The diversion was a purely precautionary measure." The flight eventually resumed after a three-hour delay. No word on whether the passenger got his or her tablet back and whether it was functioning, but how would you like to be the person responsible for diverting and delaying an international flight all because your tablet slipped out of your hands and got wedged in someone else's seat? That's how you know you're having a bad day. So I bring the story up to make you feel a little bit better. No matter what happens to you today, just keep this story in mind and remember, it could always be worse. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Thursday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather. Showers and storms possible today, a high in the upper 70s. Showers and storms possible tonight, a low in the upper 50s. The Hancock County Sheriff's Office says a Finley man has been indicted in connection with a threat of violence to staff at Hancock County Job and Family Services. In February, the Sheriff's Office said a caller from Hancock County had contacted the call center in Sandusky County, upset over canceled benefits, and threatened to blow up the facility. The Sheriff's Office said the caller didn't specify whether the threat was directed at Hancock County or Sandusky County. The Hancock County building was searched and no explosive devices or threats were found. The 48-year-old has been indicted on a charge of inducing panic, a fourth-degree felony. Get more in this story on our website. Grant money is helping the city of Tiffin fund downtown property repairs.
The facade enhancement grant helped out 15 properties this year, providing around $100,000 to finance repairs to the downtown area. The purpose is to help keep the city healthy and bring interest to Tiffin.
It also spurs other people along to like refurbish and renovate their buildings.
Property and business owners can apply for the grant online. Applications will be reviewed by the city's Architectural Board of Review.
WTOL 11's Melissa Andrews with Tiffin Mayor Lee Wilkinson. The Marathon Center for the Performing Arts invites the public to its 2025 Fifth Third Wall of Fame induction ceremony honoring inductee Tell Taylor. The induction ceremony will be held Friday night at 6, and that night is the Spring Art Walk, and people are encouraged to stop by the induction ceremony as part of their art walk activities. During Art Walk, artists are located throughout downtown Finley in shops, restaurants, and businesses, as well as in the Downtown Art Anchors, Finley Art League, and the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts. Additionally, the Jones Building Artist Studios will be open for people to check out. Get more on Art Walk in this story on our website. Remember, you can always get more news online at WFIN.com.
Well, today's cover story is our Throwback Thursday this morning. It is the National Day of Prayer, and probably would not be a surprise that most Americans don't read the Bible regularly. Matter of fact, many people never read it outside of church. And to a certain extent, it's understanding. It's understandable. It doesn't read like a novel. It is a difficult read. The Bible can seem sometimes confusing. Other times, it might even seem outdated or irrelevant. But our guest in our Throwback Thursday this morning says that it is the exact opposite. He is encouraging families to read biblical stories to enlighten and challenge themselves and to better understand how to navigate today's tumultuous times. Michael Grady is his name. He has been a Sunday school teacher for more than 50 years. And back in July of 2020, we spoke to him about the series of books that he has written called Making God Part of Your Family. In honor of the National Day of Prayer, it is today's Throwback Thursday. What are some of those key values that you hope people will draw, or you hope to help people draw from the Bible?
I believe that the Bible is relevant. And not only the New Testament, as many people believe, but the Old Testament also. And I think we miss some rich topics that God wants us to cover and benefit from our lives. I believe that as Jesus taught in parables, I believe God chose certain stories and placed them in the Old Testament to teach us, just like Jesus did with the parables. And if we read those stories with the understanding that they are relevant and are practical to our daily lives, I think all of a sudden it comes alive. And I think that's what I was hoping with my book, to help people. I spent years, as you shared, teaching. I've taught both adults and children 8 to 12. And they all, when you go to church, everybody says the Bible is the most important book. But when you ask them if they've read it, too oftentimes they say no.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried to find out why. And what I've discovered is that they say, I can't understand it.
Right.
It's boring, mm-hmm. and the Old Testament's not relevant.
Well, you know, and what's really interesting about that, too, as we were saying at the outset, I mean, the Bible does not read like a novel. It's not like reading most other books. But I think it's interesting the way you focus specifically on the myriad of parables that are told in the Bible. And maybe that's a better way of looking at it, as not one big book, but a collection of shorter stories to kind of draw a parallel to writings that people may be more familiar with.
That's a wonderful way of putting it, because that's how I broke down the book. I tried to make them into small thought-provoking doses, and so that each chapter comes with it a particular parable, a particular message that I believe God's speaking to us. And that was the purpose of the book. I don't want them to leave the Bible. In fact, I want them to encourage to go back and read it. But my book was to help encourage them to retell the story so that they're a little easier to understand,
sure,
more engaging. And then I point out how practical and relevant they are by tying it into the New Testament. I tried not to use my opinion anytime I could, and I would use a New Testament reference to tie the book together to show them that this was a principle in the Old Testament that was explained better by the New Testament scriptures that we have.
So which stories do you feel, I mean, there are certain parables that everyone is familiar with. Maybe we don't know all of the details, but most of us know the basics of certain well-known parables in the Bible. What are the stories that you would point to that most people don't know but should?
I think that particularly in the second book, I think people do not understand many of those stories from Joshua through 1 Samuel to the time of David. And I think there are stories of Deborah and Barak. You know, there was a leader, a woman leader in the Bible during the period of the Judges. There was a story of Ruth that I think people lose. It's the story of love, romance, and redemption. Wouldn't that be a good story that we could tell in the movies?
Yeah.
But it's God's. It was not only love, romance, and redemption of mankind, but it showed God's love, romance, and redemption of us as people. And it's not only of the Jewish people, but of the Gentiles. And I just think it's a story that just really comes alive if we could just, it's just a four-chapter book. But I took two chapters in my story to share it because it was so rich with practical understanding of how to live this life and then God's plan for us. See, I think in the Old Testament, God had his plan for the coming of Jesus right from the beginning in Genesis. And Ruth is a beautiful picture of how Boaz, a kinsman redeemer, redeemed Ruth and saved her from the poverty. And I believe that that was a picture of what Jesus would come do for us as individuals. And I point all that out in the book. It's just each of those stories are just rich with new information that not only help us know of a God's plan for us in eternity, but to how to live. I had a pastor one time say he wasn't worried about the sweet by and by. He was more concerned with the nasty now and now. and we deal with it. And I think that's what the stories I also try to do is to help us come through that.
Yeah. You mentioned just a moment ago, and I thought it was interesting, you made a concerted effort not to inject your own personal views into this. You are a member of the United Methodist Church, but that is one of the things that makes it so complicated in terms of interpreting the lessons of the Bible for a lot of folks is because there are so many different, not just major denominations, but even splinters within denominations. So with so many nuances in how people are taught to interpret the stories, how does that complicate what you are trying to do with the books?
What I try to share is that we need to go back to God's Word, and God's Word is spoken to us in the Bible. And if we will concentrate on what the Bible says and not what we want it to say, I think I believe it's interdenominational. It's not written. I'm conservative, and I believe that the Bible is the Word of God, and I believe that they are true stories. But I say in the introduction, you don't have to believe they're historical stories to get the message that's laid out. I happen to believe they are. But I think that if you just read them, it's rich with understanding.
Our conversation with Michael Grady from July of 2020. He's the author of the books Making God Part of Your Family. At the time of our conversation, it was a two-book series. He has since added a third to the series. And you can learn more at our webpage. Go to goodmornings.net for the National Day of Prayer. It is today's Throwback Thursday. Well, to your health this morning, cancer rates in young women are rising at an alarming rate. According to a recent report from the American Cancer Society, women under 50 have an 82% higher cancer incidence rate than do men. And black women have a 38% higher risk of dying from breast cancer than their white counterparts. With May being Women's Health Month, we are highlighting the importance of catching these cases early for best outcomes. Lachey is a cancer advocate who uses her social media platform to address healthcare inequities and support those who are facing a breast cancer diagnosis. Also, Dr. Amanda Hathaway is with us to discuss why education and self-advocacy are key to determining better outcomes in cancer care. Lachey, let me start with you. You were very young when you were diagnosed, so you can relate to what really, I guess, psychologically is the impact of getting that diagnosis at a young age, as we were mentioning.
Yeah, so I was diagnosed at 26 years old.
Wow.
And, you know, exactly. So I think from a psychological aspect, it is just very shocking. So that's the first emotion that you feel at such a young age. And I think at any age, it's just shock.
Sure.
But for me, it was not on my radar at all, as you could imagine, because usually people are diagnosed at much older ages. And
right.
So, yeah, I found a lump and I didn't think it was cancerous. I thought it was some sort of muscle related to working out, but it turned out to be cancer. It was stage 2B, ER, positive, HER2 negative breast cancer with a high risk of recurrence. And I immediately stepped into that fight mode. I was like, yes, I have to find a way to get rid of this cancer and I have to power through. And that's exactly what I did. And I continue right now the fight through advocacy. And I've been advocating ever since. And I think that that's what we all should do. We should fight back against this and keep going.
Now, Dr. Hathaway, let me ask you, what does that mean, Lachey's specific form of cancer? And help us understand this specific kind of subset of this disease.
So early breast cancer is cancer that has started in the breast. It could have spread to nearby lymph nodes, such as those lymph nodes in the armpit, but early breast cancer has not spread beyond that. So we do not see it in the bones, the liver, the lungs, or other organs.
And that's good.
Whenever we get a breast cancer, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. And whenever we get a breast cancer diagnosis, we check it for things called biomarkers. Biomarkers let us know how to attack it smartly. We check it for the estrogen receptor, the progesterone receptor, and HER2. 70% of breast cancers are those that are hormone positive, HER2 negative, like Lachey's. And then we call cancers higher risk of recurrence if there are lymph nodes involved, if the cancers are larger in size, or if they're fast growing. And so knowing if your cancer is a higher risk of recurrence is very important, because there are additional things we can do to help lower that risk.
So what are some of the latest advancements in treatment of early breast cancer, and especially for those who, like Lachey mentioned, are at higher risk of recurrence?
So when cancers are at higher risk of recurrence, we use chemotherapy, surgery, radiation, and when they're hormone-driven, we place women on hormone-blocking medicines. I tell people these hormone-blocking medicines starve the cancer to death by taking away their food source. However, when people are at higher risk, there's a newer class of medication we can use called CDK4/6 inhibitors. These medicines prevent cell cycle growth and replication. So the way I describe it to my patients is we're starving the cells to death that are there by taking away their food source, and we're preventing those cells from being able to make new cells. And together, this significantly decreases the chances of cancer coming back.
Mm. Now, Lachey, as we mentioned earlier, women of color have historically had less positive outcomes from their cancer diagnoses. What do you say to your peers based on your experience in navigating the healthcare system?
Based on my experience, my first thing I would say is get to know your body. So need to know if anything feels, looks, whatever different. So if you don't know how your body is at its normal, natural state, then you won't know when there's an abnormality going on. And so you won't be able to advocate, because advocacy is my number one tip. But the thing is, you can't advocate if you don't know. So that's my number one advice. And if you find something wrong or you suspect something is wrong, you have to immediately go and seek care. So that would be my biggest advice, because all of these things translate to getting an earlier diagnosis, which then translates into getting better cancer outcomes.
You know, one of the other things, I know this is one of the reasons why people don't get screened, or Lachey, as you mentioned, you didn't even think cancer wasn't even on your radar at first. I'm sure that part of that comes from fear, that we're just scared to find out that we have cancer. And Lachey, again, from your perspective, this does
know, it's a jolt to the system. It changes your perspective, especially when you're young, your perspective on life, your plans for the future. Like you mentioned, you advocate now. You started social media advocacy, PhD in public health. Was that on your radar before? I mean, would that have happened without this diagnosis? I guess that's what I'm kind of getting at.
I always wanted to do all of these things, and I was pursuing this. I was advocating in the past for breast cancer because before all of this, I was studying my PhD in cancer prevention, so I already was doing a lot of advocacy for minorities.
But this takes it to a whole new level, though.
Oh yeah, now that it's personal and I understand this more from this aspect. Yes, I think I'm better at interacting more with patients diagnosed. I am a bit more involved in the community side of things, not just the research and science side of things. Mm-hmm. So yes, I think I definitely am now able to do that. And that's why I'm partnering with Eli Lilly to get that message across further.
And how were you able to, this is again, another one of those things that, you know, I think drives people. How were you able to stay motivated while you're going through all of this to do what you are doing?
Yeah, so I think that everybody has that motivation and that drive and resilience inside of them. And so what I did was I harnessed all of that effort and that energy and motivation, and I utilized that and put that into my studies and everything. And I was able to just get through and work out during treatment and just do what I'm doing now and continuing to be an advocate.
A really terrific lesson on what is possible even with the cancer diagnosis and even during the course of treatment and everything else. So some terrific stuff there again for Women's Health Month, talking about cancer, breast cancer, especially in young women. Where do we get more information?
You can head to lilly.com.
Lachey, Dr. Hathaway, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, thank you.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
Sometimes you don't have to go very far to find the broken news. This from Newburg Heights, Ohio, which is just south of Cleveland, Cuyahoga County. Trevor Elkins has pled guilty to a disorderly conduct charge. It seems Mr. Elkins was reportedly caught on camera exchanging blows with another parent at a sixth grade basketball game back in January. As if that wasn't bad enough, it turns out Mr. Elkins is the mayor of Newburg Heights, Ohio. He's the mayor! And he and some other parents exchanged blows at a sixth grade basketball game back in January. The mayor received a 30-day suspended jail sentence and 1 year of probation along with a $100 fine. The mayor came to blows with another parent at a sixth grade basketball game. What are we doing, people? What are we doing? Really? Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, a kangaroo is safely back home in Alabama after she escaped and caused a minor car accident. Sheila the kangaroo was caught just casually hopping along Interstate 85 this past Tuesday. That's got to be something that you don't see every day in Alabama, I would think, you know? I mean, if this was a story out of Australia, we wouldn't be talking about it right now, because I would think that that would be rather common. But in Alabama, it is definitely worthy of the broken news. So, eyebrow-raising story. Sheila the kangaroo hopping casually along I-85 on Tuesday. State troopers had to shut down the highway during their attempts to catch Sheila. There were no injuries, but can you imagine? There were probably some awkward conversations in the workplace. Can you imagine going to the boss? Honestly, they shut down the road because there was a kangaroo in the road. Boss, I'm not kidding you. I wouldn't lie about something like that.
I don't know. If I were a boss, I would have to believe it if an employee came to me and said that, because that's not the sort of story in Alabama that you just make up out of the blue. It's got to be true. Okay. Now, this, fortunately, it has a happy ending, but it could have ended very badly for one resident in Monroe, Michigan. Resident of Monroe lost $5,000 in cash, believed that police attempts to contact them to return the cash were actually a scam. So here's the story. A trooper found the funds in the middle of Huber Road in Monroe, Michigan on Friday, and apparently was in a bank bag or something. It's $5,000, so it's a fairly large amount of cash. It was in a bank bag or some such. And so they contacted the bank, and the bank confirmed that a particular customer had recently withdrawn the exact amount that was found in the bag. So they put two and two together, and the cops attempted to call who they thought was probably the owner of the cash, but when police attempted to call, they were ignored repeatedly. Police department surmised that the subject must have been listening to their public service announcements about being a victim of fraud, and believed this individual believed that he was being scammed and kept hanging up on the trooper several times. So their message was getting through a little too well in this case. Fortunately, the person was eventually convinced that there was a real officer with real money on the other end of the line, and he has been reunited with his funds, but before some anxious moments there. Thank goodness that has a happy ending, but it probably better than just being gullible. That's probably the right thing. Be skeptical. Be skeptical. But in this case, it was actually the real deal. And a couple of other items here in the broken news. Now this, how would you like this to happen to you? You buy a new home, you go to renovate it, only to find a mysterious note left behind by a previous owner. Sounds like the premise of a horror movie, but a couple in Washington State discovered a mysterious note wedged in the cabinets, in the kitchen cabinets of their newly purchased home. Anita Rainier and her husband found the note tucked away where it was almost invisible. Upon pulling out the note, what is this? They pulled it out and they opened it up. One side read, "Don't look under the floor." That's what the note said. Don't look under the floor. The other side of the note had a 14-digit number that they just couldn't figure out. They actually took the number and they Googled it and got zero results. Which, that'd make me a little suspicious. I mean, if even Google can't figure out what the 14-digit number is all about, then I don't know. Ms. Rainier says, what we thought was interesting was that there were no results when we Googled the number. We were expecting it to be some number relating to at least something, but they have no idea what the number refers to. I would be more concerned with the other side of the note that says, don't look under the floor. For now, the Rainiers are letting the mystery be, although they suspect that the home's former residents are just messing with them. Ms. Rainier said, we are just out of theories. We have no idea, really. And she goes on to say, odds are, at some point, curiosity is going to get the best of us, and we'll probably take a look under the floor. Don't do it! Don't do it! Don't look under the floor. I don't know what they might find, but I will say this. I would want a witness for sure. If I'm going to look under the floor, I want a witness there when I do. And finally, in the broken news this morning, a British boy nicknamed Seagull Boy is holding on to his title. And this is exactly what you might expect. Dressed in a seagull costume, 10-year-old Cooper Wallace took first place in the youth division on Sunday at the European Championship Gull Screeching Contest. It was held in Belgium, the European Championship Gull Screeching Contest. For 10-year-old Cooper Wallace, it is his second year in a row as seagull champion. He says he started his career when he was bitten by one of the birds. And he's talking about turning lemons into lemonade, I guess. 70 people from 13 countries participated, doing their best to imitate the sounds and behavior of the birds. And I actually think that we have some sound from 10-year-old Cooper Wallace. This was his winning seagull screech. That's pretty good. I got to admit, that's actually pretty good. Yeah. Seagull Boy reigns again. I don't know how useful that skill is in real life, but there you go. That is today's broken news report. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
The Hancock Sports Hall of Fame Golf Outing is Friday, June 27th at Hillcrest Golf Club in Findlay. Register at HancockHOF.com under the Events tab. Registration fee is $300 per team or $75 per person. Proceeds from the outing benefit the Hancock Sports Hall of Fame, a 501c3 nonprofit organization. The Hancock Sports Hall of Fame Golf Outing, Friday, June 27th at Hillcrest. Register at HancockHOF.com. This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. So we're coming up on the weekend. Would you rather go out for a night on the town or just stay in with a smaller gathering of friends hosting at home? If you are among the going out crowd, you are in the minority, according to a new Talker Research survey. 28% of Americans say they prefer a night out on the town. 72% of those in the survey would rather stay in with friends instead of going out, which I thought was kind of interesting. And furthermore, when asked, 49% of those in the survey said that was a change in the mindset of entertaining from just a few years ago. So, I don't know, impact of the pandemic? Maybe so. Remember, a few years ago, we couldn't really go out and have those big public gatherings. Those were discouraged, frowned upon, or even in some cases prohibited. So we had to have those smaller, more intimate gatherings at home. And it turns out that at least a fair number of people discovered that they like it better. And so now nearly two out of three would rather stay at home. And the reasons why people prefer spending time in with friends instead of going out, 65% say it is a more comfortable environment when you're at home. 65%. 53% say hosting at home is a great way of saving money. 47% said one big advantage is it's easier to hear each other talk as opposed to being in a noisy bar or nightclub, something like that. 47% just like to avoid the crowds. 42%, I thought this was interesting, 42% said entertaining at home, you have more control over the ambiance, the food, the drinks, and the entertainment. And 24%, one in four, said they just like not having to get all dressed up to go out. So that's the advantage. The favorite occasions for entertaining at home birthday celebrations are at the top of the list. 49% would favor hosting a birthday celebration as opposed to going out to celebrate someone's birthday. 44% are hosting dinner parties. 37% say movie nights are a great night in. Game nights at 35%. And then 29% said TV watch parties, which I would assume would include both like big sporting events and maybe the debut of the latest season of a bingeable series that everybody loves. You get together and you watch the first episodes of a new series of your favorite show for 29%. Now, having said all that, there is the matter of prep time. At least when you go out, you don't have to clean the house, straighten up, make sure that, you know, everything is spick and span, all of that. So there is the prep time. And respondents in the survey said they spend anywhere from 10 minutes to 2 hours preparing their home for guests. Actually, probably even more than that. The average prep time to host a party at home or host a gathering, 2 hours and 10 minutes. 2 hours and 10 minutes is what it'll take you to get everything ready to host. Happening around town, the latest show at the Fort Finley Playhouse is a production that you may be rather familiar with. It's a little show called 9 to 5, and Ryan Parker is with us in the studio this morning. This is fun. Everybody knows the story, 9 to 5, seen the movie and all of that. So we don't have to really talk much about the plot on this, because I think everybody's familiar with it. But these are the shows that are kind of fun to do.
They are. It's, you know, it's, I've joked to some friends. I said, you know, this isn't The Sound of Music, you know, la-dee-da-da-da.
Yeah.
Even though there is a song where we mimic almost a Disney song like that, actually. But it's set in 1979, and it's, you know, I play the very terrible, horrible boss that treats his staff mostly women. He's a sexist boss, like garbage.
And like many were in 1979. I mean,
yeah,
it's not that far removed from reality of that era.
Sure, right. Yeah. It was a different time. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, this show kind of, we take a time machine back to that time. Mm-hmm. And it's a fun show. It is one of the funniest shows I've ever been in. I mean, we're laughing while we're rehearsing all day long. Great cast. The music in the musical is all written by Dolly Parton, every single song.
Yeah.
And it's phenomenal. The music's uplifting, upbeat. You got some ballads in there, and just great comedy.
That was the thing that I did not realize until I was looking at the website with more information about the show, is that actually the stage version is a musical. The movie was not.
Correct. So. Yes. Yeah. The movie was not a musical. However, a lot of the lines from the movie are in this show.
Right.
Some of the popular lines. The plot is. I mean, I've never actually watched the movie, but I've watched previews.
Really?
And I know, surprisingly. I'm waiting until after the musical, I think. I don't want to act just like Franklin Hart in the movie.
Well, that was actually one of the things that I was going to ask. And we talk about this sometimes. When you do a show that is so well known, there might be a tendency to... Well, first of all, people are familiar with the character, so you... That can be both a good thing and a bad thing.
Yeah. You know, I kind of compare it to years ago, I did Wizard of Oz, and I acted just like Ray Bolger from Wizard of Oz to a T, because it's such a well-known movie. Like, almost like you can't mess with that. But
right.
I feel like a show like 9 to 5, you can kind of create your own character and
go
your own route.
Do you find yourself sort of at times falling into that crutch? Because Dabney Coleman... Obviously, God rest his soul, had a very unique way of playing all of the characters that he played in his career. So,
yeah, you know, I've watched some of the trailers of him and stuff. So I kind of got a little bit of him. And then what I did was I kind of picked some horrible bosses I've had in my life. You know, I think we've all had some.
Sure.
And even some movie characters that were bosses, and take a little bit of each of them to play this just chauvinistic person. And I've been told, well, the jokes have been, I've been typecasted, but, but I've also been told a lot of people are like, you can't be that mean. There's no way you can be that mean. And it's been fun playing a villain. And then also I get my, the girls flip the tables on me in the show, and they get back at me.
Yeah,
for sure.
We were talking a little bit before we went on the air. It's been a while since you personally have taken on a leading role in a production.
So it's been a while. I took about 10 years off doing theater just to spend time with my children. Mm-hmm. I was in the Titanic musical last year, which was a lead role. However, there was 50 of us, and it highlighted so many different people. Mm-hmm. And this time, I've got a lot of lines to memorize, music plus a full-time job. But it's been so much fun. The rest of the cast has been phenomenal. The ladies, Daphne Bauer playing Violet, Megan Meyer playing Dorley, who is the Dolly Parton character, mm-hmm. and Sam Henry playing Judy, who's the new girl in the office.
Right.
We've all been working hard, and the rest of the cast as well. It's been so much fun.
For you personally, what kind of drew you back in? Was it that just that itch to get back on stage?
Oh, absolutely. It's one of my favorite things to do. I actually play music around the area too, guitar and singing and harmonica, mm-hmm. and all that jazz as a solo musician and in my band Violet Vinyl. But what I find is a lot of times I play restaurants where, you know, it's your background music,
right.
basically.
Yeah.
And when you're doing theater, it's all eyes on you. Mm-hmm. And there's just something about this adrenaline rush and making people laugh and making them feel things with no cell phones in sight,
mm-hmm.
which is the best part.
Yeah.
And people are just focused, and you really just put on this beautiful experience.
Yeah, because we've talked about that in the past of, you know, the Fort Finley Playhouse is a very welcoming ensemble and group for anyone who maybe hasn't been on stage since high school, but got a taste of it then and wants to get back into it.
Yeah, absolutely. We get all kinds of people that do that. I remember specifically, we did Bye Bye Birdie back in like 2002, and one of the gals in the show hadn't done a show in 30 years.
Yeah.
And she came back and got a lead role.
Mm-hmm.
There's been other instances where there was a guy who he accompanied a friend to go audition, and the guy who didn't even intend to audition popped up, and he got the role over his friend who had been doing theater, and this guy had never done theater.
That's a little awkward, but it is cool. Those are cool stories.
Absolutely.
And it's what community theater is all about.
It really is. You know, we welcome everyone. You know, I even had a friend the other day message me, and he said, you know, I wish I could do this. And I said, try out,
you
know, come out,
you
know, like I'll support you. And it's not just acting and singing. We need help with set building.
Right.
If you're a construction worker, contractor, painting the sets,
mm-hmm.
Helping find props at thrift stores and asking friends, all kinds of stuff. I mean, it takes a huge effort.
And by the way, it's not like you were walking out on stage for the first time in 30 years in front of, you know, 10,000 people.
Yes.
It's not this isn't a Broadway stage. This is a very intimate, which is a great place to see a show, as we've said before.
Absolutely. There's not a bad seat in the house.
Yeah.
I think we have, 100 seats, mm-hmm. and it's basically, I mean, you're right around the stage. So if you're a person that has anxiety, and you might want to sit in the back because you're pretty close to the talent on stage. Yeah. But it is such an experience, and welcoming, inviting. You know, like I said, there's not a bad seat in the house, and there's so much history of the building as well.
Yeah. So give us all of the details on the show. 9 to 5. Yes. You open next week, right?
Correct. We open this Thursday, May 8th, and that's going to go on from May 8th through the 11th, the 15th through the 18th, and the 22nd through the 25th. And you can find tickets at fortfinleyplayhouse.org/tickets to order your tickets. Or you can call the Fort Finley Playhouse at 567-525-3636. And you can also order tickets there.
Okay. Opening night 1 week from today. And Ryan Parker with us from the cast of 9 to 5 of the Fort Finley Playhouse, the latest production. We have a link on our webpage for more information as well. goodmornings.net. Ryan, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thanks so much, Chris. Appreciate it.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program, of course. Once again, a reminder, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. That is goodmornings.net. So visit us online, our little corner of the World Wide Web. Goodmornings.net is where you find us. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.